Good evening. Good evening. Welcome. Tonight we're going to celebrate the party spirit because it's New Year's Eve, and New Year's Eve is such good fun. I'm not a great fan of New Year's Eve, I have to say, mainly because of the fun fascists. You know what I mean by the fun fascists? Those people who just tell you, you've got to have fun, you know. They're never without a balloon, they've got a box of party poppers and a whoopee cushion. They've always got some game you can play blindfold. And New Year's Eve is the fun fascist Nuremberg. But if, like me, you're freelance, then New Year's Eve frankly loses its point. It's basically for office workers, because we showbiz freelancers can get that wellied and take that many drugs on a wet Wednesday in February. Which is why entertainers, actors get the reputation they do for being such total libertines, you know, overindulging in every vice, swapping lovers at every opportunity and never missing a chance to bend the moral spine of the country. They're the kind of people whose sinfulness reaches even greater heights than their artistic achievement. Ladies and gentlemen, one of the country's greatest actors, Bill Wallace. There's an ambivalence we all seem to have about parties. When they're good, they're great. When they're not, you'd rather be strapped to the dining room table in front of 24 hours of Cliff Richard videos. Stella Gibbons, who wrote Cold Comfort Farm, once remarked,
"My idea of hell is a very large party in a cold room where everybody has to play hockey properly."
The American writer Bill Vaughan wrote wearily about New Year's Eve.
"Youth is when you're allowed to stay up late on New Year's Eve. Middle age is when you're forced to."
And Jay Leno, the host of The Tonight Show on American telly, warned,
"The only way to spend New Year's Eve is with friends or in a brothel. Otherwise, when the evening ends and people pair off, someone is bound to be left in tears."
And the people whose parties you never want to go to are the ones Mark Twain described as,
"It was the sort of house where they have six Bibles and no corkscrew."
Although some parties are a complete blast, the American novelist Vance Borghele pointed out that,
"The mark of a good party is that you wake up the next morning wanting to change your name and start a new life in a different city."
And Dorothy Parker once confessed,
"One more drink and I'd have been under the host."
But parties on New Year's Eve somehow carry the special burden not just of romantic expectations, but, as Bridget Jones famously spelled out, of New Year's resolutions.
"Have you been staying with your parents over New Year?"
"Yes," she said eagerly.
"You too?"
"Yes.
No, I was at a party in London last night, a bit hungover, actually. I gabbled nervously so that Una and Mum wouldn't think I was so useless with men I was failing to talk even to Mark Darcy. But then I do think New Year's resolutions can't technically be expected to begin on New Year's Day, don't you? Since, because it's an extension of New Year's Eve, smokers are already on a smoking roll and cannot be expected to stop abruptly on the stroke of midnight with so much nicotine in the system. Also, dieting on New Year's Day isn't a good idea, as you can't eat rationally, but really need to be free to consume whatever is necessary moment by moment in order to ease your hangover." I think it would be much more sensible if resolutions began generally on January the 2nd.
"Maybe you should get something to eat," he said, then suddenly bolted off towards the buffet, leaving me standing on my own by the bookshelf while everybody stared at me, thinking, "So that's why Bridget isn't married. She repulses men."
Bridget Jones by Helen Fielding. The trouble with parties starts when you're quite young. When you're a teenager, no one tells you how to handle them, what you're supposed to do, and how you're supposed to behave. So like Jasper Carrot, you end up practicing before you go.
"Do you remember the first parties you ever went to in your early teens? You know, you're all spruced up, hoping to get your first kiss. You've been practicing at hours at home, kissing your arm. And learning how to undo your satchel straps in the dark. Just in case you got lucky. I remember my first kiss. Cindy Braithwaite. It's not a real name, I'll change it to protect the guilty." "What a girl, a voluptuous brunette from Swanshurst Grammar. Year older than me. I was there at a party. spick and span, smelling of Old Spice. Yeah, Old Spice. It was real exclusive stuff in those days, you know. You could only buy it in supermarkets, butchers, ironmongers, crematoriums. Anyway, we were playing Postman's Knock, and it was my turn to go into the kitchen with Cindy Braithwaite. I never knew what it meant. I mean, she turned the light out, and wham! I thought, blimey, she's trying to swallow me head. This industrial suction pump cramped. All my fillings started to vibrate. My eyes were being sucked down into my nose. Meanwhile, the tongue was trying to de-scour my windpipe from the inside. And all I could think of was, I can taste pork scratching.
Jasper Carrot. All through my life, people have regaled me with those racy stories of teenage snogging orgies, but when I was young, everybody else was attached to each other like sink plungers, and I was sent off to turn out the lights. Although I do remember once being kissed by Fiona Watson at the school dance, and over her shoulder seeing Freddie Evans, but that's another story. And if they're listening, 07785, but... And if, like me, you were at public school, you always ran the risk of being made to go to posh balls. I think I went to one. But when you read Victoria Mather's social stereotype, The Father at the Teenage Ball, you realise why I never went again.
Henry is livid. He hasn't been able to have a drink all evening because of picking up those wretched children from Hammersmith Palais. Sarah said she wasn't going to do it, having cooked them a dinner party, frisked them for alcohol, and worried herself sick about Poppy Morrison's story of almost having a syringe injected into her bottom in the loo at the Plume Ball last year. Henry says it's all a lot of damn nonsense. Now he's a desperate man. All the children, streaming out of the ball, look eerily alike. What was the point of Pertita saying, "Daddy, you'll recognise me by the pink pashmina"? All the girls have pink pashminas and curtains of blonde hair. Torquil was expedited, looking immaculate in a perfect dinner jacket, bought for £15 from Oxfam, which now bears no relation to the boys emerging with their bow ties ripped off and their shirt tails hanging out. And the idiot has turned off his mobile. All the girls are barefoot and limping because it's the first time they've worn high heels. Sarah, crouched at home over a second bottle of Pinot Grigio, is now hysterical. Henry, you'll have to go in. Torquil may be drowning in his own vomit. Henry would rather go over the top at the Somme.
I might miss him, old girl. Calm down now. Don't panic, Captain Mannering. Remember, he said all he wanted to do was get sweaty and snog a lot of girls.
Perdita finally emerges in tears because her pashmina has a cigarette burn and somebody's groped her emergency £10 note out of her bra. Torquil lopes out with his DJ rolled up in a plastic bag sticky with beer. It was cool, Dad. Where were you? All these Range Rovers look alike. Grunter Howard's coming to spend the night. Can you make sure Mum doesn't wear an embarrassing nighty?
Even earlier in one's life, pre-teenage, if you can remember that, one had to go to kids' parties. Truth, I don't really remember if they were any fun. All I can really remember is that you got to slide across the floor, hit your friends, tease the fat boy, and then cry because you had to go home. If sugar was ever made an illegal drug, my mother would have been up there with the Colombian mafia. Cakes, lemonade, sweeties, it was wonderful. And if you're middle class later in life, you get subjected to the worst kind of party, the cocktail party, the cocker's pee, as my mother used to call it. Ghastly. As Paul Jennings said,
no matter how many chairs you provide, the guests always sit on the edge of a little table and knock sherry onto the carpet.
Like me, P.G. O'Rourke held them in complete contempt.
A cocktail party is what you call it when you invite everyone you know to come over to your house at 6 p.m, put cigarettes out on your rug, and leave at 8 to go somewhere more interesting for dinner without inviting you. Cocktail parties are very much on their way out among rug-owning, hungry, snubbed people.
And Victoria Wood simply said,
Of course, I don't want to go to a cocktail party. If I wanted to stand around with a load of people I don't know eating bits of cold toast, I can get caught shoplifting and go to Holloway.
Although, there is one even worse kind of party. Fancy dress theme parties. Woody Allen accidentally went to one with a moose that he had shot, but which had woken up only slightly injured.
So I drive up to the party, and I knock on the door. The moose is next to me. My host comes to the door. I say, hello. You know the Solomons. We enter. The moose mingles. Did very well. Scored. Some guy was trying to sell him insurance for an hour and a half. 12 o'clock comes. They give out prizes for the best costume of the night. First prize goes to the Berkowitzes, a married couple dressed as a moose. The moose comes in second. The moose is furious. He and the Berkowitzes lock antlers in the living room. They knock each other unconscious. Now I figure here's my chance. I grab the moose, strap him to my fender, and shoot back to the woods. But I got the Berkowitzes.
Woody Allen. The most dangerous thing about all kinds of parties is that they're pregnant with the risk of making faux pas. Arthur Smith.
I made a terrible social gaffe. I went to a Ken and Barbie party dressed as Klaus Barbie.
Gilbert Gottfried, a mad American comic I know, once said that he met Jackie Onassis at a party and asked her if she remembered where she was when Kennedy was shot. Now, if you do go to parties of whatever kind, there are some basic rules, as Jeff Green has pointed out.
Don't arrive too early. It's considered bad manners to be found lurking on your host's doorstep when he gets home from work, guzzling your fourth can of strong lager and chatting up his elderly next-door neighbour. Don't forget to use the toilet before leaving home. It will do your image no good if you come out of the bathroom and have to say to a long queue of groovy party people, I'd leave it a few minutes in there if I could. Don't find yourself alone in the lounge reading the host's CD covers, unless you are the host and the party's long finished. Don't be the first and only person on the dance floor, unless you're someone's fearsome auntie and ABBA's Dancing Queen has just come on. In which case, it's understood you just can't help yourself. Don't be the one stupid enough to ask everyone at 2 a.m, who'd like a nice cup of tea? Don't call any mystery phone numbers found in your wallet the next day and open the conversation with, hi, remember me? Oh, come on, you must. I was the one who made the smell in the loo everyone was talking about.
The British are fantastically squeamish about the loo, aren't we? Endless words designed to avoid facing up to it. Endless evasions. Ronnie Barker and Ronnie Corbett here, swimming in euphemism.
Hello, yeah, how are you? Enjoying yourself?
Very nice, sir. It's a very nice party.
Oh, thank you, Robert.
Anyway, I wonder if I might use your bathroom.
Yes, certainly. Yes. It's up the stairs, first on the right and the last on the left.
Thank you.
I say, it's a funny time to be having a bath, isn't it? Would you prefer a drink?
No, I'm not going to have a bath.
I see. Well, there's nothing else much you can do in there. There's just a bath in there, you know.
Just a bath?
Yes.
No other things?
No.
Oh. Only I rather wanted to, see a man about a dog.
Well, old Griffith over there, he's a vet.
No, not a real dog.
Yeah, I see.
No, I just wanted to sort of, wash my hands and generally, go upstairs.
Oh, well, there's no need to go upstairs. You can wash them in the kitchen over there.
No, I hardly think that would be right, surely. I wanted to use the smallest room. Yes, well, that would be Camilla's bedroom, but she's asleep.
There is a little brush cupboard under the stairs, if you like.
Now, you don't seem to understand what I mean, you know. If I said I wanted to inspect the plumbing, would you understand what I mean? Well, that's what I want to do. I want to inspect the plumbing.
But you'd get filthy.
No, you don't. I'm going to be absolutely frank with you. I want to do ones. Ones? Yes, ones.
Ones what?
What do you mean, ones what? Ones, ones. Ones, number ones. I want to do number ones. I want to be excused. I want to spend a penny. I want to go to the lavatory. Oh. Yes, I want to go to the lavatory.
Well, why didn't you say so? Julia, Robert wants to go and sit on the donut in Granny's greenhouse.
It's not over. Sorry, just popped out for a waz. No, it's fine. Nothing untoward. And you know what can happen? Seinfeld put his finger on the primeval fear with Luz.
Did you ever go to a party, go in the bathroom, flush the toilet, and the water starts coming up? That is the most frightening moment in the life of a human being.
My favourite kind of parties are dinner parties. I love them. But you suddenly discover that the most unlikely people hate them. Thackeray described them as...
given mostly in the middle classes by way of revenge.
Walter Matthau's wife, noted for her entertaining and wit, still said...
I know the dying process begins the minute we are born, but sometimes it accelerates during dinner parties.
Part of the problem is that people seem to find it terribly difficult just to be polite at them. Maybe the drink gets the better of them. Randolph Churchill wrote to a hostess the next day...
I apologise for my behaviour at your dinner party. I should never be allowed out in private.
And the French novelist André Maurois, who one presumes dined only with people he didn't like, said...
Politeness is not speaking evil of the people with whom you have just dined until you are at least 100 yards from their house.
And the most excruciating dinners are the ones which don't quite gel socially. Jasper Carrot again.
Have you been to a dinner party where you're all sitting around the table after the meal and everybody is talking to everybody else except you? Somehow all the people have drifted away from you and your observations on New Zealand embroidery patterns, and you're left talking to yourself. Now, you don't want to wind up like Cliff Richard at a wife-swapping party. So you've got to get back into the conversation somehow. So you start to attract people's attention by saying outlandish things like, I ran over a water buffalo today, you know? A friend of mine claims he's eaten Archbishop Desmond Tutu. But you can't do it, can you? So you start playing with the lighted candle on the table. You know, you pick the wax, dribble down the side, and you start making models of sausages and phallic symbols and stuff. You start to get those wooden toothpicks and you jab them into it and you start bodging the things back into the flame. You can get quite a barbecue going after a while. And then you realise you're the absolute centre of attention. Because everyone's elbows are stuck to the tablecloth with molten wax.
I don't think that's ever happened to me. And I always cook for my own dinner parties, despite the fact that Phyllis Diller once said...
Do not taste food while you're cooking. You may lose the nerve to serve it.
Luckily, I've never had that problem. I'm a good cook and I've never got the caterers in. They always seem to terrify me, caterers. They take over your kitchen like some demented Annika Rice, and when they've gone, you can't find anything for a year. Any of us could have warned Kenneth Horne.
People home is not just where you live, but a place to entertain your friends. At least that's what I think. And recently when I celebrated my birthday, I decided to throw a party. Well, I didn't want the trouble of catering myself, so when I saw an advert in one of the glosses, which said, Bona Caterers, we can handle everything. I gave him a ring, and next morning... Good morning, anybody there?
Hello, I'm Julian, this is my friend Sandy. Yes, we are your bona caterers. Yes, that is to say, Julian and me, we can cater for your every function. For your function. You see.
Right, from your hunt ball down to your intimate atomy.
Yes. Just give us a free hand and we'll give you a do your guests will never forget. Never forget. Yeah.
Now then, what's the occasion?
Well, it's my birthday party. I'm 39.
Oh, did you hear that, Sand? 39.
Around the neck he's 39. Yes, so you'll want a cake?
Yes, well, we can do you something pretty bizarre in marzipan.
How about Dundee, Jewel?
Yes, I could let myself go in Dundee.
Yes, he could let himself go in Dundee, he could.
Well, I think that's a simple cake. Now, what about the rest of the food?
Well, it depends on what you have in mind, you see. I mean, you can have your standing up running or your sit down knife and fork.
Mm. Aren't you? Your stand up fingers works out cheapest.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think a cold buffet is best.
Would you like us to lay on a turkey?
Well, I hadn't planned on a cabaret.
Oh, he's bold.
Goes too far. Mm. Right, now drink it.
Oh, drink it. Mm. Yeah, drink
what
it.
What do you plan there, Trej?
I'll take, well, 2 dozen bottles of eggnog for a start.
Yeah, but I don't know anybody that drinks eggnog.
We do, Heartface.
Heartface?
He likes his eggnog, Jules. Yeah. Oh, 3 eggnogs and he lets his rye right down. Say what, don't you, Jules?
Oh, what? Yes. What? Gin makes me maudlin.
That's true. Well, you don't want him maudlin all over your guests, do you? I mean, he gets quite lachrymose on the gin and he blurts it all out. Yes. Out it comes about Bognor. Yes, he had an experience in Bognor, didn't you, Jules? Yes.
Traitor.
Yes.
It promised he'd never mention it.
Oh, yes.
When I've been on the gin, it all wells up.
Wells up in him, yes. And up comes Bognor.
You don't want Bognor coming up.
All right, face 2 dozen bottles of eggnog.
Oh, I didn't know you were coming.
Of course we're coming. Wouldn't miss a party with that Mick Jagger at it.
No.
Mick Jagger? I haven't invited him.
We have. And David Frost with Peter Cook and Dudley Moore.
You've got to have your actual celebs, or you'll never get reported in the glosses.
Glosses? You want to see your eating the glosses, don't
you? Yeah. All right, well, now what about my other guests?
Well, let's have a look at your
here
list.
Are.
Oh, yeah, we don't want him. Oh, he's down the dial. Well, she must be 80 if she's a day, though. Oh, no, they're out. They're all out.
That only leaves me.
Sorry, Ducky, you're out as well. Yeah, but the people we've invited, you just wouldn't fit in.
New Paddock, Kenneth Williams and Kenneth Horne. The trouble is, in the end, is that people's expectations with parties just get higher and higher. The fun fascists rule and you've got to grab the chance at a party to do all the things you apparently never dare do in daylight. As S.J. Perelman admitted,
I did not suspect it was an orgy until 3 days later.
The truth is... But it's much more likely that the memory of the party will be far, far better than the party itself. Never mind how marvellous it was.
Well, I got that sort of extraordinary experience. I understand not everybody has that sort of experience. It's something to do with the sun. I wouldn't understand myself, really. You know, quite for no reason, I'm here for the season and high as a kite, living in error with Maud at Capferra, which couldn't be right. You know, everyone's here frightfully gay. You know, nobody cares what people say. Now, though the Riviera is really much queerer than Rome at its height, on Wednesday night, I went to a marvellous party with Nunu and Nada and Nell. You know, it was in the fresh air, and we went as we were. And we stayed as we were, which was hell. Poor Grace started singing at midnight, and she didn't stop singing till 4. You know, we knew the excitement was bound to begin when Laura got blind on Dubonnet and Jim and scratched her veneer with a Cartier pin. I couldn't have liked it more, honestly. I mean, it was a marvellous party. We played the most wonderful game. Maureen disappeared and came back in a beard. And we all had to guess at her name. Imagine. Old Cecil, good old Cecil arrived wearing armour, some shells and a black feather ball. Poor Millicent wore a surrealist comb made of bits of mosaic from St. Peter's in Rome. But the wait was so great that she had to go home. I couldn't have liked it more, honestly. It's the most fabulous sight. I've never seen such a carry-on. I mean, it couldn't happen anywhere else, Blumley. It was peculiar. You know, people's behaviour away from Belgravia would make you aghast. So much variety watching societies campering past. You know, if you have any mind at all, Gibbon's divine decline and fall sounds pretty flimsy. No more than a whimsy. By way of contrast, on Wednesday last, I went to a marvellous party. I must say the fun was intense. We all had to do what the people we knew might be doing 100 years hence. Can you beat it? We talked about growing old gracefully, and Elsie, who's 74, said, A, it's a question of being sincere, and B, if you're subtle, you've nothing to fear. Then she swung upside down from a glass chandelier. I couldn't have liked it more. I'd been to a marvellous party. We didn't sit down to dinner till 10. You know, and young Bobby Carr did a stunt at the bar with a lot of extraordinary men. Poor Frieda arrived with a turtle, which shattered us all to the core. The Duchess passed out at 2:45, and suddenly Cyril cried, fiddly-dee, and he ripped off his trousers and jumped in the sea. I couldn't have liked it more. I'd been to a marvellous party. Elise made an entrance with May. You never have guessed from her fisherman's vest that her bust had been whittled away. Poor Lulu got fried on Chianti and talked about esprit de corps. Louise made a couple of passes at Gus, and Freddy, who hates any kind of a fuss, did half of the Big Apple and twisted his truss. Ha ha! I couldn't have liked it more.
Nell Coward, people just aren't called Nunu, Nada and Nell anymore, are they? Anyway, from Bill and me, have a very happy new year and a great 2005. Good night.